You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm Brad Jackson.
And we're back. So, things are going to get a little dark and spooky. We're kind of, traveling to the underworld to acquire this this week's cigar review. So, what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So, this week, we have got the Punch Diablo. And I've got to say, this is a hell of a smoke. This is now my second or third time having this cigar, and this is the strongest, darkest punch I've ever had. Amazing.
Punch Signature Series has been my everyday smoke. But since this thing, I've had like three or four of these since these came out. I mean, this is like a new release from this year's IPCPR. And it is, as they say, the fullest and darkest punch to date.
Yeah, I mean, this thing is, just the spice and the pepper notes are nonstop. And that's attributed to the Ecuadorian Sumatra Oscuro wrapper with the Connecticut broadleaf binder with Nicaraguan and Honduran Habano Lajero. And, man, that Lajero really shines through.
Age from 4 to 6 years. It's spicy, rich, full of flavor. It's the dark side of punch. Yeah, like, this kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you remember it, the Diablo cigars from, like, way back in the day. They were kind of a little bit more peppery, but this right here definitely, I mean, like, that one was, like, straight up.
Didn't
like,
we run into a shop that actually had those, and it's like, those haven't been manufactured in a long time, like just covered in dust.
Yeah, I think it was that place that we were pretty sure was a front for a drug operation that they didn't actually sell cigars there because everything had it in like an inch of dust. But yeah, like I haven't had one of those Diablos in forever, but I used to love those things, and they quit making them. So this one kind of reminds me of that with that peppery hit. But yeah, this one's definitely.
This
stronger
is not for
and
the weak.
Darker than anything I've, and punch tends to be on the, at least some of them tend to be on the strong side, and this right here is like a fucking ass kicker.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a super religious guy, but I might just have to go and say a prayer after this.
Listen to some heavy metal. Yeah, shout to the devil or.
So, for any video game nerds, if you want to run up and punch Diablo in the face, who are you going to call?
Yeah, if you try to just Google punch Diablo, you're going to end up with a whole bunch of Diablo cheats. So you have to actually type in punchcigars.com to look this up. And do yourself a favor, go there and watch the Diablo origin story video. It is hysterical. Just shout out to Mr. Punch and his Dragon Gary for bringing us this cigar. You'll know it once you watch the video.
You totally missed your cue, by the way.
What? There was a cue?
Yeah.
He's not here.
For a sponsor.
Well, if you're going to go fight the devil, you should call in the Strike Force. StrikeForceEnergy.com. Like I said, this thing's so strong, it's already got me like off my game. StrikeForceEnergy.com. Use your promo code CigarNerds for 20% off your order. And they come in the little tin pouches so you can carry more of them with you. Coming up for Dragon Con, just, pack your bags full of them. Doesn't take up as much room as some of those inferior canned energy drinks. So if you have to travel to the underworld to fight Satan, it's easier to transport mass quantities of Strike Force.
Yeah, this may be a...
It works better than Holy Waters. Throw some Strike Force original at him and you're good to go.
This right here may be a evening Dragon Con smoke. This is definitely not the breakfast smoke.
Oh yeah, this is not going to be one of our wake and bakes. If we want to do anything else the rest of the day besides like sit in the chair and be like, oh, I don't want to do anything. This is going to be definitely a end of the night or like second wind. It's time to like go rage cigar. And this is also made by AJ Fernandez at his factory in Esteli. So, it's even got a little AJ touch to it. And we know how much, pretty much everything from AJ Fernandez has been badass. So, yeah, I love.
And I got to say, too, that this is a, for as great of a cigar as this is, we talked about the Punch Signature. The Punch, Grand Puro, I think was a close second for me. This right here, those are three, very different punches
yeah.
at very good price points.
Yeah. Like, even for the 660, I think this is around $9, $9.15, something like that. So it's not stupid expensive. Yeah, like, so this may work into the rotation of my regular smokes as long as I can keep finding them. Because, like I said, it usually rotates between
They do
the,
go quick.
Yeah. Especially, like, the new stuff, yeah. So it kind of hops between, you know, the Signature Series, the Grand Puro, and now this. And you can pick these up at the cigar shop in Cumming if you're in the area. Shout out to Tim. So this week we're going to talk. We've talked some about some animation and stuff, but we haven't really delved into the world of anime. So this year, or this episode, we're going to talk about probably one of the greatest animes of all time, at least in the U.S. Market. People have kind of applauded this movie as a gateway drug to other animes. This is kind of where everyone starts. So we're talking about 20 years of Cowboy Bebop.
I think it's time to blow this scene. Get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Time to go to Mars and hunt some bounties.
Yeah, man. I mean, talking about, people's gateway into anime, this is probably one of the first animes that, I saw. It was, I was never huge into anime, still not, but I can remember Cowboy Bebop, Vampire Hunter D, Initial D, and that's about it for me and anime, I think.
I remember, and there was Big O was another one that I watched.
Full Metal Alchemist.
Full Metal Alchemist. Was it Scarred, I think, was Sky? It was spelled weird. Scarred, something like that. But yeah, Full Metal Alchemist.
Spirited Away.
Yeah, it was like, back in the day, anime was something you kind of had to seek out. If you were one of these anime nerds, went to the, MomoCon and the AWA Atlanta, which I've never gone to either one of those. I need to do that. I hear MomoCon's fun, but
MomoCon is definitely on my to-do list. I wouldn't mind.
It's
kind of
like early Dragon. It's like it's like first of your Dragon.
Yeah. It's like introductory Dragon.
Yeah, if you survive Momo, then you can attack the dragon.
But yeah, I feel like I would go to AWA and just be clueless.
Yeah, it'd be all the hardcore stuff. It's like, oh, I don't know what any of this is.
Yeah. It's kind of like I feel that way at Dragon Con oftentimes, where I'm like, okay, it's anime, but I don't exactly know what it is. But, I mean, it's great because it's, allows
That's
you to strike
my,
up a conversation, and people's like, oh my God. And then, you branch out and you hey, that actually sounds interesting. I may check that out.
That's kind of my default answer to newbies at Dragon Con, and they're like, what is that? And I'm like, if I don't recognize it, it's probably anime. But yeah, Cowboy Bebop was probably one of the, it's pretty big internationally, but also like as far as bringing America into, the Western world into anime, because it was one of the, actually it was the first anime on Adult Swim. So that's kind of how most of us, 90s kids, got introduced into anime was, the late night Adult Swim programming where they would, when it first started off was, a combination of more adult cartoons, your Aqua Teen Hunger Force and whatnot, and random anime. And this was like the first anime that was on Adult Swim. So that's kind of how we all found it and fell in love with it.
Really? I was always a fan of Firefly and such, and the fact that we got space pirates and cowboys and everything, it's kind of felt natural. It's like a second home for me.
Yeah, because it is kind of a weird genre of not just, samurai or Star Wars type space stuff. It's like got a mix of kind of kung fu movie with Western and,
I almost know, feel like stuff. It's you know, if the Japanese were to envision traditional Americana, this is you know, just yes. Like, you know, when we talk about a lot of anime and everything, it's like, okay, gotta have, you know, over accentuated large eyes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Probably cat ears and a tail. And the hair's gotta be blue. I mean, yeah. There are just, you know, certain things that, you know, you can draw on. I just completely mind fucked you there.
Yeah, it yeah, because it's like, so, I don't know. One of the things that it's yeah, kind of funny. This is like, yeah, this is how Japan sees America. It's, especially some of these where they like, because in the world of Cowboy Bebop, it's 2071. Crime has kind of gotten out of hand, so the police kind of bring back the old bounty hunter things, and like there's like, you know, 3 million bounty hunters in the galaxy, and they get instead of the cops having to chase down every criminal, you know, bounty hunters like the crew of the Bebop hunt down and bring people in. But apparently, as we were just starting off in space travel and developing kind of stargates, like, you know, to reference SG-1, to travel between systems, one of them blew up like half the moon and rained debris all over Earth. So Earth is mostly uninhabitable. So we kind of moved out into the galaxy and terraformed different moons and asteroids and stuff. And they're kind of all based on what Earth used to be. I mean, there's like, I remember one city that like was very much, oh, this looks like Paris, France. And then they had whatever, a Morocco planet and a Chinatown planet. It's... It's kind of like the Epcot Center of the galaxy. Like, there's different worlds based on old, like, Earth locations.
Well, and I mean, you know, it's kind of funny, because even within the anime, what is the animation, you know, for that they play for the upcoming bounties? The one.
Oh, it's
the,
Big Shot.
So Big Shot was almost like, you know, I was having flashbacks to, all right, this is the bounty equivalent of America's Most Wanted.
Yes. It's these two, like, ridiculous characters that are, you know, fake cowboys who, you know, one of them's almost got her boobs out, like, you know, typical game show type stuff. And they announce the, like I said, it's such a big thing that there's, like, a whole TV show dedicated to, like, hey, guys, here's this week's bounty and all we know about them. Oh, but... And, you know, before we get too deep into it, let's, you know, talk about, introduce the characters. We have, of course, like the main, pretty much the main guy, Spike Spiegel, voiced by Kiyoshi Yamadera in the Japanese version, and Steve Bloom, who was a former guest on the podcast. We, you know, interviewed him last Dragon Con. Jet Black, who was, you know, Spike's the former hitman gangster, you know, who left the lifestyle and became a bounty hunter kind of out of necessity. And then you have Jet Black, who's the former cop turned bounty hunter when he got kind of fed up with the government and whatnot, and, you know, portrayed by Unsho Ishizuka and Bo Billingsley. And then, of course, the con artist Faye Valentine, played by Megumi Hadashishara and Wendy Lee, and the insane genius hacker Ed, played by Aoi Tada and Melissa Fawn. You know, so that's like your main, and then of course I and the genius corgi.
I think Cowboy Bebop really helped, you know, popularize the corgi.
Yes, we have a corgi, and every time I like going back into, like, I'm like, I call him Ein some days, just her for Ein. Just, I'm like, what? Where's Ed? Can you
always
hack the...
begging for food?
Yeah, pretty much. And sometimes I think she's the smartest one in the house. And I'm just like, yeah, can you hack my computer for me? Damn data dog.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. Like, I don't know. I mean, Ed's character was one of those that just really kind of stood out. Because it's like, all right, you know, what are you going for here? It's like, I'm going to be uber crazy and ridiculous and, you know, constantly getting into shenanigans. But, you know, give me any kind of encryption and magically... I just know how to crack it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, she is like one of those prodigies of computer hacking. For a couple episodes, Ed, they you know, are hunting a master hacker, which turns out to be a rogue AI program that is graffitiing the earth with lasers. But they find Ed, who's like this, I don't know, like 12, 13, like this little kid who's like, was like abandoned in an orphanage on Earth, but is like magically like a super hacker, but is like batshit insane most of the time. And it's just constant. It's, I always like Ed because she's kind of a, just a contrast to everyone else in the Bebop. Because, you know, Spike's like super like, you know, dark and, you know, not really dark, but he's more of this like, you know, whatever happens, happens, you know. Like, just freaking very zen dude. And then Jet's kind of like, you know, the grumpy older brother. And then Faye's just, you know, constantly either scamming people or running from trouble herself. And then there's, like, carefree Ed, who does not give a fuck and, like, just plays and eats and fucks off. Yeah. It's like everyone else is so dark with their personal problems, and Ed's just like, woohoo, let me hack something.
Arms flailing, legs kicking, and, you know. Unless, of course, a strange alien that ends up on your ship and you get bitten by the goo monster.
And then she eats it.
So, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, you know, for me, like, I'm going back, rewatching, you know, the season all over again. And, like, in my head, I'm like, you know, hearing Kid Rock's Cowboy. Like, I'm trying to Americanize it even more. And it's
like, well, speaking of the music, I think that's one of the other things, too, that made this such, like, impactful here and popular, was the music all done by Yoko Kano, who is, you know, an insane, like, composer. She's, you know, if you've watched an anime and thought, like, the music was badass, look at the credits. It's probably done by Yoko Kano. She even put together a band called The Seatbelts that released, like, 7 albums based on, like, the soundtrack and still tours Cowboy Bebop. But the music was, like, you know, this music is one of those things that's, you know, kind of universal. It doesn't really matter the language of it, you know, as long as you, because, I mean, hell, we watch a lot of Frog Leap, and the dude's, like, Finnish, but he does, like, you know, covers of American pop songs. It's one of those, I think, like, music is kind of like an international language, and her music for this was, like, so badass, because it was such, it kind of went the whole gambit from jazz to rock and roll to opera to freaking heavy metal, and a lot of her lyrics, you know, except for a couple songs that are actually in Japanese, are English. So it very much, like, you know, I think made this, you know, more popular here in America, because, like, you know, even if you didn't understand the word, you could understand the music, and it went well with the anime.
And I think that's one of the reasons why I had, you know, a difficult time getting into a lot of the anime myself, is, you know, I would always, you know, either have to read subtitles, or you would find a dubbed version that, you know, oftentimes, you know, dubbing 20 years ago isn't the same as, you know, dubbing audio today.
Yeah, hell, a lot of that stuff, they're like, here's the video, kind of make your own dialogue. And it may not, if you go and try to watch something with subtitles versus the English dub, sometimes it's completely different. If you,
it's like, wait a second, there isn't a word for that? Come on. Like, you know, and even, like, you know, with Cowboy Bebop, even watching the English version, like, you know, I just turned on subtitles for shits and giggles, and it was really kind of funny because the subtitles were very much edited. Because they wouldn't type out shit or anything else. So it would be, you know, inaudible explicit. Yeah. I was like, huh.
Damn it, I want to learn how to say shit in Japanese.
Well, I mean, you were hearing the audio, but I mean,
you know. Yeah, but like with, I can't tell where in the sentence underneath, like, I can't pick the word out of the. Because the Japanese kind of all runs together for me. It's like, I'm very much, there's some, like, hardcore anime people that are like, no way, we watch it in the original with the subtitles. We don't do these American dubs. And I'm just like, can't do it. I can't, I want to, like, watch my action. I can't read. Reading just distracts me from the, what's going on screen.
So it's like, either I can read the words, or I can see, you know, the scenes depicted, you know, within the animation. I can't, you know, process both at the same time.
That's one thing. It's like, my DVD player was jacked. Like, I couldn't find the remote, so I couldn't. Like, I rewatched the series in English, but when I went to watch the movie, I couldn't switch it to English. I was stuck with the Japanese with the subtitles. But
God forbid you had to go buy a $10 DVD player.
It was like, I didn't want to get off the couch. I'm just going to suffer through it. But watching it, like, I could, like, even if I got distracted and wasn't reading it, the action and stuff translates so much that I could pretty much pick up what was going on, even though I had no clue what they were saying.
Why is there a blues musician with a harmonica?
Oh.
But, I mean, that you know, the music aspect of things is really what drew me in, you know, as a, you know, musician myself. Like, I really enjoyed, you know, like, all of the different episodes that tied in, you know, either they were trying to, you know, help some, you know, blues musician or something, you know, to that effect. And, you
yeah,
know,
it was always very, like, you know,
or, you know, I'm a big rock star. And
yeah, because it was, you know, not only was it kind of the music theme to the episodes, like, even when you, like, go and watch the, they didn't call them episodes, they called them sessions, and, like, you know, kind of like jazz musicians, and, so, you know, it was like, they very leaned, you know, very hardcore into
very
the
much
music
like
aspect
a,
of it.
You know, an orchestra. Yeah. Cowboy Bebop, you know, I guess, you know, if you like space pirates, you like orchestra, you like, you know, a good mix of action, and it was kind of crazy for, you know, some of the episodes could be so off the wall, and then other ones be, like, profound, where, like, you could sit down and analyze and be like, holy shit. You know, this may change the way I view the universe, like,
oh, yeah. It's
you
like
know, in depth.
Very,
and
it goes
like,
very, you know, there's some that are just off-the-wall comedy stuff, like, whatever, the mushroom hunting episode. But then there's ones that is, like, very, like, existential and, like, you know, psychological, and you're like, wow, this is, like, kind of... Especially Spike, too. I mean, he always had some very, like, Bruce Lee, like, wisdom shit to drop on people and would just say some things that are just like, yeah, I try to be Spike in real life because he's, you know, not only is he cool, he's just, like, fucking zen as fuck. I mean, he can be, like, you know, surrounded by guys trying to kill his ass and he's just like, I'll light my cigarette and I'm going to kick these dudes' ass. If I die, I die. Whatever, let's do this. You know, he's like, nothing ever got to him.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know. It's... I guess, you know, at the end of the day, when it's like, you know, there's only one guy that can really kill you, and, you know, Vicious of all names.
Yeah. I mean, they got some good names for...
Should have been a Pibble.
But yeah, the, reading some of the interviews with the director, Shinichiro Watanabe, you know, talking about Yoko Kano, he said he kind of based Ed off of her because she was such, like, animated herself when he first, like, met her, like, in is kind of this weird musical genius. And he said so much of the time it was like, you know, traditionally when you're scoring a movie, you're like, here's what I want, here's the scenes. Is like half the time she would just come in and be like, here's the music we need, like, without even, like, you know, he said pretty much like the stuff that he wrote inspired her to write music, and then, like, and, like, you know, she would end up turning in way more stuff than they actually requested. And listening to her music inspired him to, like, write scenes to go along with some of her music. So it was kind of like a weird back and forth between them of, like, what came first, the scene or the music. But he said they were kind of just mutually inspiring each other, like, back and forth as this went. That's why so many of the, I guess, action sequences where there's not a whole lot of dialogue, there's just action and the music, you know, you can pretty much cut those out and, like, play them as a freaking music video. It just kind of fits so well.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, and the fact that, you know, it wasn't just limited to the, you know, a lot of anime, you know, gets, you know, there's only the one type of music. And I don't know how to describe it other than, you know, the classic, you know, Japanese, like, pop sound. I mean, it's...
Some K-pop or...
Well, I mean, J-pop. Not really. It's, yeah, I guess J-pop is probably, you know... the proper genre description. But I mean, it's just one of those things that, like, if you've heard that one song, you've heard 30 different renditions of the same song.
It's kind of like techno music. It's all
boots and pants and boots and pants. But with this, I mean, there was so much variety and everything that, you know, it's like, holy crap. I mean, like, it just creates a good flow and it draws you in. And
yeah, like, I mean, I remember one episode in particular that, yeah, cause we're big metal heads here. The episode Heavy Metal Queen, where they meet this space trucker VT who was, you know, her husband was a famous bounty hunter. And then she became like a truck driver after he died hunting bounties, and Spike and Faye are after a guy smuggling some kind of explosives and stuff, and she ends up seeing him and gets pissed off because he, like, you know, had cut off one of the truckers or something, so she helps him take this dude down, and they get into a whole bunch of shit. But yeah, that whole, like, episode's full of, like, this, like, just badass metal music. And at one point, they're like, what is this noise? And she's like, this is called heavy metal, and Noah will not turn it down. I mean, she's just a badass herself.
Yeah, that was a really good episode. The mushroom was a very, you know, psychedelic.
Yes, when they all start having, like, trips. Yes.
And let's see here.
And Ed's kind of a dick in that episode, too, because, you know, they get cut off, they crash on this planet, they're out of fuel, they're out of food, and Ed's like, I'm going to go find a bounty myself. So and she runs into this guy who's wanted for, like, selling mushrooms, and he ends up dropping a bunch. So she's like, I wonder if these are good. And, like, Ayn eats one and turns into, like, one of those, like, robotic dogs and starts hopping around, beep, beep, beep. So she goes back and just, like, leaves them out for people to define, just, like, to test them to see if they're like, edible or not. So she, like, you know, could have killed the whole crew, but, like, all of them have, like, the most bizarre, like, acid trips. Like, Faye ends up in, like, an underwater, like, the toilet overflow, and then, like, Spike's on, like, a endless stairway.
He's on the stairway to heaven. Yeah, dude.
He talks to a frog, and the frog's like, hey, man, this is the stairway to heaven. He's like, stupid frog, and just keeps on. It's like there's like a whole segment of like each of the crew having these like just bizarre acid trips, and you know, fucking Jet's like talking to his bonsai trees and having like some real deep conversation. It's just kind of funny.
It's like, fuck, I heard it. I'm sorry.
But yeah, some of those like little one-off episodes were.
I think we need a cigar nerd bonsai.
Yeah,
is cigar smoke good for bonsai?
I don't know. We could find out. I mean, there's that one weird...
I'm not sure I know how to properly care our prune bonsai, though.
I don't know. We'll rewatch Karate Kid 3 and learn about the bonsai. And there's that weird Japanese store at the North Point Mall now. I think they have bonsais. We could pick some up.
Oh, dude, we'd just go to Pendergrass. I mean, it's full of bonsai.
Yeah, if you want some random object, just go to Pendergrass Flea Market, which could definitely be like one of these weird planets they show up on.
Dude, you're right. Are you interested in a rug? A tattoo?
You some might.
Lightly used undergarments.
You might meet Paki, King of the Pipes.
Yes.
Oh.
And all of his knives.
Actually, did you end up watching the movie?
I did not watch the movie. I watched, you know, just the first season. I was a little bit limited on time, so I was trying to power through like 5 or 6 episodes a night. And...
Yeah, I watched everything, and I had a copy of the movie. The movie came out in 2001, you know, which if you're watching the series, it takes place between episode 22 and 23. But speaking of cigar stuff, there's you know, there's a terrorist attack. Somebody blows up a tanker truck that's filled with some kind of virus.
Was it a Return of the Teddy Bomber?
No. They should have brought the Teddy Bomber. But, so Spike goes trying to find information about the, you know, they're all kind of going at it from their own ways. And Spike's, like, trying to track down more information about the virus. So he's, like, going through this, like, Moroccan street type thing. And he stops to smoke his cigarette. And dude walks up, like, with this, it looks like a hand grenade, but it's the most epic torch lighter ever. I mean, he's like, guys, pulls out a hand grenade, and when he squeezes the handle on the hand grenade, I mean, it shoots like a foot flame out of that thing to light his cigar. I'm like, I want that as a real, like, cigar lighter.
That sounds like real life Tactical Earl.
Yeah.
Because all you have is this belt fed 50 cal and a hand grenade.
Yes, but I want the hand grenade lighter from the Bebop movie.
Ugh. Well, the holidays are fast approaching, and for the cigar nerd on your list,
hand grenade lighter if you can find one, or a taint scrubber. Sorry, this reminded me of grenadesoap.com. Not a sponsor, but they have a tactical taint scrubber there.
I'm done.
Hey man, all their soap's made with real gunpowder.
I'm done. I don't even know what to say to that.
Remind me afterward. I'll show it to you. Like,
I actually had like some thoughts on, you know, Cowboy Bebop, and it just went out the window. All I'm trying to do is think of anything outside of you scrubbing your taint.
I didn't say I bought one. I said they had one. I mean, I haven't bought one yet, but...
All right, so of all the bounties, who do you think is probably the quirkiest, or who's your favorite?
I gotta say, like, for a team of bounty hunters, they are probably the worst bounty hunters. I don't think they ever captured anybody in the whole series. Like, either, like, whoever they were going after ends up getting killed in some, like, extremely violent way, so they lose the bounty. Or it's like, you know, they get away. So I was like, they never actually catch anybody.
But they try really hard.
Oh, yeah, they definitely try very hard. And maybe, like, you know, the easy ones that they just, you know, happen to get. You know, they didn't show that on the show.
Or it's like, cause... you know, where, you know, they capture, you know, a gang. And it's like, you know, you see the, you said it earlier, the damn fucking... bounty TV show.
Oh, Big Shots?
Yeah, so you see the Big Shots, like, yeah, and, you know, five gang members were apprehended, but these were the small fry, so the bounty doesn't count. It's still available. And they're all like, motherfucker.
Or it's like, you know, it might have been the second episode when they're chasing the guys who, Hakim, who was the one who had kidnapped Ayn. Like, they end up chasing them into, like, a police station. So the police end up arresting them, so they don't get any bounty out of that. Or with the Heavy Metal Queen episode, the guy ends up getting blown up by his own bomb. And so it's like, they never freaking actually catch anybody.
Yeah, so I think for me...
Except for Teddy Bomber.
You know, Teddy Bomber was up there as one of the very interesting ones. Like,
yeah, that whole episode, Cowboy Funk, I believe it was... There's, like, Spike meets he's, like, a rich kid that decided to be a bounty hunter, and he took the whole cowboy thing way too seriously. He rides on a horse, and he's very much, like, you know, an idiot, but he he has a horse and goes, like, full cowboy and keeps mistaking Spike for the Teddy Bomber, who gets his name from exploding teddy bears.
Yeah, it's very... Very interesting. I don't know. The Honky Tonk Women episode was, you know, that's where they introduce, you know, Faye. That one was kind of interesting.
But yeah, the Teddy Bomb, him and Cowboy Andy. Yeah, he kind of does remind me of Woody from Toy Story. But yeah, the guy is just such a, like, bumbling idiot, but with his, and him and Spike just immediately hate each other, and it's hilarious. And Teddy Bomber, too, the whole time, they're like, he keeps getting away, and he just wants to, like, tell the reason why he's doing it, but no one will listen to him, and it pisses him off more. And at the end, he's finally just like, fuck it, I don't even care anymore. It's like... I'm going to jail. I don't want to even, like, talk about it. It's like, I'm tired of getting interrupted. Screw it all, man.
Pierre Lafau. That was an interesting episode too. Yes. Very, very French.
Yeah. Pierre Lafau. Yeah, that guy was, like, weird as shit. It's like, it was a, basically they tried to,
you know what it reminded me of?
What?
The Penguin. Like, yes. If the Penguin had, like, assassin and cat-like reflexes, you know. But, I mean, just the fact that it's short and round and everything, I was like, needs an umbrella.
Well, he has, like, the gun cane, which is very much, looked like a penguin weapon. I mean, you put an umbrella on that cane, he was pretty much the Penguin. Because, you know, we like steampunk stuff. So it's like this fat guy... with, like, a top hat and, you know, a cane and, like, a monocle and everything, pretty much. And just, like, always grinning and, like, hello, good sir, and I'm here to kill you all. But he was, you know, the reason he wasn't actually fat is, like, his coat was, like, you know, a jetpack and shield generator. And, like, at one point he, like, opens up his coat and it's just full of knives and guns and rocket launchers. Like,
I had flashbacks to the Boondock Saints, and it was like... There were six guys, all with guns. No, it was one guy with six guns.
But he was kind of an experiment gone wrong. He was like, they were trying to build the perfect assassin and give him all these like skills, but it warped his brain and kind of turned him into like a child. And Jed even says it. He's like, there's nothing crueler than a child. Because basically to him, this is all a game. And he's going around just like, you know, just slaughtering gangsters and you know, any witnesses and whatnot. And Spike, as bad luck as he has it, you know, shooting pool. And this happens to like walk down the alley right after this dude like wastes a bunch of people. So he's like, I got to kill Spike now. And like,
and hey, dude. Like that montage of him shooting pool, that is one guy you don't want to challenge in a game of billiards.
He's a hustler. Yeah. He's a hustler, baby.
And the animation too from that like we'll get into the animation in a second after we finish talking about Pierre. But
what are you talking about? All of the film is an animation.
I'm just saying the style of it. It's very like detailed. I mean, it looks very much like a you know a. Film noir like poster or something. It's like you could take like screenshots and like frame them on the wall as like some kind of like weird artwork. I mean, some of that stuff just gets like the stylizing of it just looks really cool. Like that you don't get with most you know just general anime.
Kind of reminded me like you know I talk about it a lot, but you know from the film noir standpoint of like Sin City and stuff.
Yeah.
But like you said, you know you could actually you know take some of that and be like. That's an amazing concept piece.
Yeah, that's like sequence of him shooting pool just reminded me of like paintings and stuff I've seen. But yeah, that yeah, and it's kind of funny because that guy's kind of like this ultimate assassin, but he's like a child mind. He's also scared shitless of cats because apparently the people that were abusing and experimenting on had like a cat that had like two different colored eyes. So at one point when he sees Spike's eyes, it freaks him out. And when you know, like so, I said he's. Got this shield generator and Spike. There's nothing Spike can do. And finally, he, you know, the one time he's distracted because of like cat shit, he manages to like hit him in the knee with a knife. And then the guy just has like a, just falls down and has like a complete like fit like a child. It's like the first time he's ever been injured and then gets stepped on by a giant Disney World animatronic, pretty much.
Like you said, you know, do they ever get the bounty?
No. Pretty much.
Too many forces at work in the universe. Sorry, Space Cowboy.
Oh, yeah, but he got squished by a giant drum-playing dog. Oh, yeah, when he sees, like, the little robot cat and just loses his shit and, like, shoots the fuck out of it, it's just... But, yeah, the whole time he's there, like, you know, he rides with a smile on his face and he leaves with one, too, and he's just, like, just, I don't know, weirdly batshit. Yeah, I liked Perot, but... Before we get into like our, I guess our main villain of this, the reoccurring villain of the series, one of the things that I really like about is like the level of detail they put into some of the stuff. Because you know we're big gun fans. We're definitely you know we definitely love a good firearm, and that's one of the things that kind of always drew me to this is like the just the niche dude, tiny details
guns
they
are
put.
Scary.
Scary good. But like when you see Spike pull a gun on somebody, you can see like the grooves in the barrel, and you can see the you know it's not like some few, you know even though this is like 2070 they're still using guns from like nowadays, and you can see like the Glock logos and see that you know what model Glock Faye carries, and you can see like you know Spike has a Jericho 9mm because like all the like the little intricate details of you know and everything looks very used. I mean, you can see like this, the tiny little scratches and dirt marks. I mean, they, whoever did like the actual animation design, like put in a lot of detail. I mean, Spike carries Jet carries a Walther P99. It's like, I mean, they're so detailed. You can, like I said, see like the logos and everything on stuff that's, you know, most of the time you don't see people getting that like hardcore into the detail on objects, but it just makes, adds a realism to it as much as they put into the actual like scene design.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I don't know. You know, talking of the, you know, the Walther and everything else, I'm like, yeah, this is very James Bond-esque, you know. Like especially like the intro, like, you know. And that's the thing that's kind of gone away, you know, from back when, you know,
shows used to have theme songs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you had a minute and a half intro?
Yeah, I mean, the...
Dude, it's almost like the cigar nerds, man. Those guys need to fucking cut it down to 15 seconds. Yeah, we hear you. No, we're not doing that.
Yeah, like, the opening sequence is like a music video into itself. and even the closing sequence is like a... You know, the credits is like a music video. But, yeah, it's... like I said, the level of detail. And that, and there's so many little... I don't know, I guess hidden, or sometimes not so hidden, references to pop culture and stuff. Like, I think it's like it might even be the very first episode where they're trying to track down a guy who's selling, they call it red eye, some kind of like drug that you inject in your eye and gives you like freaking Hulk rage. But at one point, the guy goes into a bar to sell it.
Can we talk about that for a minute?
What?
Because just injecting stuff in general, not cool. But injecting some shit into your eye? Definitely not cool.
But that bar he goes into, if you look at it, it's the bar from Desperado. It's like an exact recreation of the bar from Desperado where freaking Antonio Banderas goes in there and like shoots the fuck out of the place. And like when that, and especially when the dude walks in with him and the girl and trying to sell the drugs, it's like, you know, the bad guy that episode that they're hunting has a very Antonio Banderas look to him. And then when the guys, like, rush in and try to ambush him and shoot the fuck out of the place, I'm just like, whoa, someone was watching Desperado when this happened.
Yeah. So, yeah. Somebody ever offers you a vial of bloody eye, chances are you're just going to get a bloody eye. So don't put needles in your eyes, folks. And that's cigar nerd wisdom of the day. Don't put needles in your eyes.
And when Jet goes in there, like, afterwards, and there's, like, the bodies laid everywhere, it just reminded me of that scene, like, post-massacre and Desperado, and when they come in, there's, like, you know, bodies everywhere, and they're trying to clean up. It just, like I said, that whole episode, I'm just like, which was kind of in a, like, space Tijuana, I think. It's like, even though these things are now on different planets, they still call them by, like, the Earth stuff they're based on.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta keep it relevant. I mean, that's why you need space marines. For space Tijuana. We gotta keep that shit in order. Forces.
Oh. Yeah, and you get that whole like spike and with the freaking sombrero and the poncho. And the whole code words too is like, I want a Bloody Mary. I've got plenty of vodka, but I don't have any tomato juice. Oh, I've got tomato juice. I don't know. It was just weird. I kept waiting for him to ask for some piss wanchongo from Desperado.
We should actually turn that into a real thing.
Name a beer piss wanchongo. Yeah, I just kept waiting for somebody to pull out a briefcase full of guns or a guitar case full of guns that episode.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's crazy, you know, we had the heavy metal episode, but then it's crazy, you know, you got your blues with the Asteroid Blues, you got your, you know, the last two episodes, you know, were part one and part two, you know.
The real folk blues.
Yep, surrounded by the blues. You had, you know, honky-tonk women, very twangy country sounding, and then you had the Stray Dog Strut. I feel like that needs to be, like, an actual song.
Yeah, because that episode was all about...
Like, I could see ZZ Top doing, yeah. You know, Stray Dog Strut.
Yeah, because that whole episode was, like, Jet's personal episode where he was kind of going in, because, you know, he's got, like, a robotic arm and something with his, like, a thing in his face where he was, like, got blown up as a cop by this mafia hitman. And they find out that this guy's, like, in the process of escaping from prison and is taking over this prison ship and... So Jet kind of goes to get his revenge or whatever with his old partner and then finds out, like, no, it was actually his partner that betrayed him. But it had a very, like, detective noir feel to that episode. I mean, it was, like I said, each... I know the genres of the show just kind of varied so much. From, like, they kind of covered, like, so many different genres within the series. It never was just one thing.
Yeah, I mean, like we said earlier, you know, it has a little bit of something to offer everyone. I mean, if you just want to look at some decent action, or if you, you know, want to, you know, skip ahead and, you know, for some of the more profound episodes, I mean.
And his partner, his old partner, was very much like a Dirty Harry carry the big like revolver, even though it's like, you know, the future and everyone has, you know, automatics and space. And he's still carrying like,
dude, I don't want to hear it, man. You know, you're talking some of the greatest weapon platforms ever developed, you know. Why change? You know, you see all these lasers and everything else. What happens when, you know, your laser pod juice thing runs out? And
this thing, like, Spike had a ship with a laser cannon on the front of it, but everybody's still using Glocks and and guns that are from at this time 70 years old.
Have you seen the torture test videos?
True enough.
That's why.
Glocks will probably still be around in 2070. All these things were built to last.
You can drive a truck over it.
But I do like the little single-shot rifle pistol that Spike has. That speaking of the Blues episode, where turns out a, you know, harmonica playing prodigy is actually a, you know, 100-year-old space demon or something. Some kid that got hit by a meteor and
that's what happens when you became immortal. The devil. And then you smoke the Diablo cigar.
Yeah, you sold your soul. I mean, that's the story of most blues guys, right? You sell your soul to the devil, learn how to play guitar. That's pretty much, I guess, what this kid is. And he's just kind of just taking random dudes. And cause he's like, well, people will ask questions. But if I've got, like, a crippled dude with me that's my father, then no one will ask questions. And he just kind of keeps recycling these poor guys. But he's, like, basically immortal, except for if you can find a rock that was made of the same rock that, like, turned him into the immortal, you can kill him. And, like, yeah, Spike has to shoot him in the head with this badass rifle gun.
So, do we talk about the Syndicate?
Yes, the Red Dragon Syndicate. Yeah, piece throughout this. I mean, there's plenty of standalone episodes, but the overall story arc kind of peppered throughout the series is... And, you know, and we get episodes that we got an episode dealing with Faye's past and Jet's past, but really, you know, Spike became a bounty hunter because he was a hitman with this Red Dragon Syndicate and end up, you know, falling in love with his best friend and boss's girlfriend, Julia, and tries to leave the syndicate with her, but she takes off on her own and leaves him, so he fakes his death and you know, becomes a bounty hunter or whatnot. So the whole time he's being hunted by his old partner, Vicious, who is like, you know, he's kind of like the dark side of Spike, where if Spike went full evil, he could be Vicious, but like, it's like Spike's very much like modern dude with the guns and whatnot, and Vicious is still like primary weapons, a samurai sword, and he's very like old school.
I mean, he's you know,
and theatrical
very
spot.
Much, you know, samurai.
Yeah.
He's a vicious samurai.
Which, going back and rewatching this, Spike reminds me very much of John Wick. I mean, he was doing gung fu before gung fu was a thing. I mean, especially when him and Vicious are fighting, and he's fighting Vicious with, like, a pistol, and he has a sword, and he's like dueling him with his pistol and like blocking sword shots and shooting while he's kicking and stuff. It's, like I said, it's pre John Wick. In fact, at one point, I think they were going to do a live action Bebop movie, and supposedly Keanu Reeves was signed on to play Spike, but it never kind of fell into development limbo and never got made. But I could very much see a John Wick, Spike Spiegel.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that could definitely, you know, work. I don't know. In the time of the Matrix, you know, it's kind of crazy that they didn't use, you know... That's one thing. You never get, like, the real, like, slow motion action with this. Like, it's pretty much, you know, balls to the wall.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, action movies now, they try to slow everything down. But, you know, this, it's just, you know... Full on chaos.
Oh yeah, and those scenes where you know, cause Spike is always just like super cool, but every time he ends up having to deal with like Vicious or some of his syndicate past, that's like the only times you see like Spike lose his cool and get like legitimately pissed off. John Wick, I'm gonna kill every motherfucker in the room. Cause I think the first episode that we see that in. Vicious kind of is starting to I guess, perform a coup or whatever, and he ends up killing his old boss that was, you know, friends with Spike, and they kind of, you know, the syndicate or whatever is trying to, like, kill the people that were, you know, connected to it. And, you know, so again, they put a bounty on the guy who's already dead, trying to lure out Spike. And of course, Vicious, you know, Faye is dumb enough to take the bait and gets captured. And, so Spike, you know, goes and sees his old friends that were in the, and, you know, they tell him, like, you know, what's going on. And he finds out that he's got her. And he's like, where are you at? She's like, you're actually coming to save me? He's like, well, I got my own reasons for doing it, so don't take it personal. But, like, I don't really want to save you, but I want to kill this motherfucker, so yeah, I'll come save you if I have to.
Saving you is kind of like, you know, second priority. If it happens, great. If not, you know, no loss, because that's not really what I'm there for. Which is kind of crazy, you know, they spend so much time on the Bebop, you know, and, you know, it's like, it's almost like that, you know, Roommates from Hell. Like, you know, because, you know, they never really quite get along. Like, they don't really enjoy each other's company. It's all like, yep, we're on this ship, and it's Activate, and...
Yeah, because you're very much like, yeah, especially these episodes where...
There's not much, you know, brotherly love.
No, because you expect, like, you know, partners to have each other's back, but... You know, very much in all these episodes where Spike kind of goes off to confront something from his past, like Vicious or the Syndicate, he usually ends up doing it on his own, either out of his own choice or, you know, Jet's like Ballad of the Fallen Angels is that first one. But yeah, that, like, you know, Jet tries to talk him out of him. He's like, forget it. It's your past. Like, just leave this shit alone. He's like, yeah, man's got to do what a man's got to do. And he's like, well, fine, you're gone on your own if you're going to go do some dumb shit. So he ends up, like, you know, tackling this stuff by himself. But yeah, when he, that first initial introduction to Vicious and that gunfight in the abandoned church is one of the most, I mean, he's like kicking grenades at people and do it. You know, it's like the first time you see him, like, show up in a trench coat and it's playing that, that badass song of, like, you know, whatever, Fire Rain or something like that. I forgot what it was called, but and Vicious whole thing, he's like, I'm the only one that can kill you. And he's like, yeah, and that goes for you too. You know, it's that first, like, there can be only one moment.
Oh yeah. I don't know. I think another one that, you know, kind of tells, you know, a lot more. Go ahead.
And I like from that episode too, when he goes to visit the lady that, Annie, who was one of his old contacts, said, like, these kids are trying to steal porno. Like, back in the day when you stole porno magazines from, like, convenience stores, and they run into Spike, and Spike, like, takes their magazine. And then you see him, like, reading the magazine, like, the rest of the time
just
he's there talking.
Just having a conversation, yeah. Like, pour another whiskey. You know?
Yeah. Can I have this Spank magazine and that Beretta behind the counter? That's one good convenience store. They had guns and porn. I mean, it was, like, kind of covered all the bases.
It was the truly the one-stop shop.
But you were saying.
Yeah. The Jupiter Jazz episode where, you know, Faye, like, robs everybody and, you know, cleans out the Bebop. And Jet, you know, is like, all right, I got to go find her. And, you know, in turn finds his girlfriend, Julia. That was kind of a interesting episode.
Yeah.
You know, that was another one of those where, you know, Spike eventually, you know, runs into Vicious again for that story arc.
Oh, yeah, because that too, he's like, because, you know, the guy who's trying to, there's a guy who was also betrayed by Vicious, wants to kill him, so he's using kind of the name Julia as a code name, kind of his bait, and Spike unwittingly gets caught up in it. But yeah, that scene, those poor, like, gangsters on Jupiter or whatever, first they try to rob Faye and get the shit kicked out of him. Then they end up trying to, like, I think, rob Vicious at one point. And then, like, they run into Spike and they're like, are you Vicious? And that's, like, the first time you see Spike lose is cool. And he's like, you really think I'm Vicious? That's, like, the freaking insult to him is they called him Vicious. And he just, like, punches this, like, pipe and, like, bends it and then kicks the shit out of, like, all four of the dudes. And then when finally Jet shows up and they're like, We don't, whatever you got, we don't want to, we like this plan is like, we're leaving. We've tried to rob people 3 times, got our asses kicked every time. We don't even want to fuck with it anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, then you get the final battle. And again, they kind of, you know.
And traditional boss fights.
Yeah. Ed, you know, so they have, yeah, you know, the episode before that, they have Ed and Ayn kind of go off on their own adventure to get the, because the last two episodes are so dark. They're like, yeah, we got to get the comic relief and the children away from what's about to happen, because shit's going to go real dark. And then, you know, Spike finally finds Julia again, and turns out the reason why she did not show up in the plan for them run away is because Vicious caught her and gave her a choice. He's like, you kill Spike, or I'm going to kill you both. And to save herself and him, she like just disappears on her own. But Spike or Vicious finally like does his coup, and they're like, we're going to kill anyone who had ever anything to do with Vicious's crew, and just like starts trying to lay waste to everybody. But you know, in the process, you know, after Spike finally gets Julia back, you know, they kill Annie, and they end up, she ends up getting killed too.
So Annie is not okay.
No. But yeah, you know.
Like I kept it.
Annie, are you okay? Are you okay, Annie?
But yeah, it's like when Julia dies, he's like really got, you know. And that's one of the things too, like, you always think Spike is like so cool and nothing gets to him. But in reality, he's like, has lost everything. You know, he lost his original family of, you know, the syndicate. He lost his girl. To him, he's like almost like nothing affects him because he doesn't have any emotion anymore. He's like kind of lost.
Well, what do
he's
they
kind
say?
Of, it's almost a depression.
The man to fear is a man with nothing to lose.
Yeah. And especially after she's finally like killed for real, he just kind of goes back and gathers his weapons and says goodbye to Jet and Faye and is like, you know, I'm probably going to die, but I'm taking this motherfucker with me, and just takes on the entire freaking gang and just fucks up a whole office. But I mean, that's like very John Wick, and ends up getting to that last moment where he finally, like, you know, levels up through the game and gets to the boss battle, and him and Vicious, you know, each lose their weapon, and like Spike's got his sword and he's got his gun, and you get that very much like Western showdown where they're finally, there's like, let's do this. And instead of like, they throw each other their weapon back and like kind of like do like a quick draw thing, and he shoots him through the heart, but Spike gets his freaking gut slashed open in the process, and you know, accomplishes his mission.
Spoilers!
But then again, you know, you see him like, you know, walk out, and the rest of the gang is sitting there, and they kind of lower their weapons, so they're like, oh shit, our boss is dead. And then, you know,
are you the new boss?
Spike gives him the wink and the finger guns, and then falls over, and then, you know, epic, you know, whatever song at the end. But I mean, they never did like say that he's dead. I mean, so I mean, they could possibly, you know, mob doctor there patched up, like, oh, he's killed the boss, he's the new boss. I mean, if they wanted to do a sequel, it's unlikely but possible.
I mean, we've definitely seen Spike, you know, injured, and you know, like, that was the thing. I forgot what battle it was, but, you know, he's laying there all fucking bandaged up and wrapped up, and Faye's just there giving him absolute shit. Like,
yeah, because, and it was after that first battle with Vicious. He's, like, almost like a full-on mummy, and she's, like, trying to sing to him. He's been in, like, a coma for, like, 3 days or something like that, and he's like, and he's like, and she's, like, all being loving to him because he saved her from Vicious. She's like, oh, what is it? And he's like, you sing off key. She's like, you motherfucker. I've been taking care of you for 3 days and you insult my singing. But yeah, like some of the one-off episodes too, I love. I like the one where, I think it's Wild Horses, where you see Spike takes his ship in to be basically like a tune-up or whatever. And he takes it to the guy who actually built the ship. And it's like, this guy's restoring an old NASA, like, it's actually the Columbia, which was kind of weird because, you know, that's the one that blew up or whatnot. But, you know, he was a professional, like, spaceship racer. And Spike's ship, you know, it's been guns and lasers, everything else been added to it, but it was originally a race ship.
Yeah, no, that was awesome, you know, and he's like, yeah, I don't know, man, like, that episode, as, you know, kind of a car guy and a gearhead myself, it was like, all right, you know, he's sending his prospect out, and you're like, find me this part. What? Nobody has this part. That part's like 50 years old. It's like, call this guy. He's got one. Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah, if anybody's got one, it's got to be him.
Yeah. And that whole thing, dude, he's like, well, why don't we put these silencers on the, and he's like, no, like, you know, if you quiet the engine, it just kind of, you know, the ship's like a living thing, you know, you can't, you know, if you silence it, it's going to cover up like the noises that will alert you to something's wrong and stuff. It's like, you know, it's, and then that whole episode too, because there's a virus these guys are trying to capture that causes the computer to go dead, and Spike ends up getting kind of trapped in orbit, and he's going in and going to burn up, and he's like, hey, Jet, by the way, there's a bottle of whiskey hidden behind the fridge. Why don't you go ahead and take a drink? And he's like, what? And he's like, yeah, I'm done for. I'm out of gas. I'm getting dragged in. Like, and then the other guy's like, hey, I'll save you if I can have that bottle of whiskey, and comes in the old freaking space shuttle to rescue Spike from orbit. And, you know, even though they get it, the ship's like, he's like, oh, we may still burn up on entry. And at that point, Spike's like, just lights a cigarette. And he's like, yeah, whatever happens, happens. Just very, like, zen about it all.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, did you see the Mishmash Blues thing? This was the, you know, commentary and everything. So basically, you know, this episode came about, you know, due to a lot of the violence and stuff actually happening in Japan. This was right after, you know, the last episode, but the characters provide like a commentary that ends with the words, this is not the end, you will see the real Cowboy Bebop someday. And, you know, that I think plays into what you were saying.
Yeah, I don't think I ever saw this this Mishmash Blues. I was not aware of it. But yeah, I mean, it could like return at some point. I mean, we've seen Spike get injured before and come back. So, and you know, with the movie, they set it kind of before the events of the finale. But, you know, like I said, if it's one of those, that's one thing too. Like, the director said when he made this, they're like, well, you shouldn't end it this way because there's no possibility of it going on. And he's like, well, I don't want this to be like Star Trek and just go on forever and, you know, not be as good as, so he's like, you know, he's like, when he set out to make the show, he had kind of his story arc of what he wanted to do and give it a definite endpoint. But I think he probably left it, you know, vague enough there that if he ever did decide to come back and, you know, try it again, it's, they could probably dig up Spike and get into some more shit.
You see Ayn, like, start frantically digging somewhere, and, you know, a hand appears and a Spike. And
Zombie Spike. Oh, they had that weird, like, you know...
Yeah, that was kind of a thing. You didn't see zombies in this.
You had that, like,
I guess there's no such thing as space zombies.
I guess not. But you had the weird, like, Indian guy, the Indian shaman that Spike kept going and visiting. I'm like, maybe he'll do some, like, you know, Indian voodoo and resurrect him or something.
He could use the feng shui.
Yeah.
Feng shui master.
So as we kind of you know, wrap this up, do you have a particular favorite episode or instant in mind?
I don't know. Hard Luck Woman was a you know, with the meteorite striking Earth and everything, you know, that was kind of an interesting one. I got really big into Far Cry 5 and episode 23, Brain Scratch, where they introduce the cult, Scratch.
Yeah, that wants to
basically, you know, digitizes the soul and tries to upload it to the internet. I believe in an era of hashtags and, you know, social media presence that...
This could very much be a prequel to Ghost in the Machine.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, a very interesting episode.
Oh,
You know, we kind of touched on them earlier, but the bounties of the Perret and then the Teddy Bomber were, you know, just...
Yeah, the Teddy Bomber is one of those, like, just funny episodes. Yeah, they even get him and Spike and Cowboy Andy get that, like, you know, traditional Western, like, standoff at the end, too. I loved all the episodes with Vicious and Spike kind of dealing with his past, and because those had some of the best, most badass action sequences, I think, of the series. But as far as some of the standoff stuff, I liked the ones you mentioned, but I liked Stray Dog Strut with Jet, because like I said, that really had like a cool, gritty detective feel to it. And some of the ones where we learn more about, you know, Faye's past, like the one where the tape shows up and, you know, find out more about her memory, or the ones where she, you know, found out when she first woke up and was like, you know, in the future and whatnot, and just kind of how she got to be the way she was.
I guess one of the ones that, you know, I talked about Feng Shui, but, you know, that was probably an episode that I really liked. You know, kind of had very much a Indiana Jones meets Tomb Raider Phil. You know, this is basically, you know, Jet gets an email and, you know, it's like goes looking for an acquaintance only to find a grave. And, you know, then, you know, the daughter, you know, Mia Fey, you know, is like, well, I've got this sunstone, and, you know, basically they go on this whole quest to, you know, find her father. That was actually, you know, one of the, like, more serious, like, heartfelt ones, you know, that, like, you know, toward the end of it, the father's like, you know, I only wanted, you know, you to be proud of me, and, you know, I love you, and all this shit, and, like, they make amends only for him, you know, to die, and it's like, yeah. Holy shit, you know.
And we didn't really talk about the movie that much, but... The movie had a cool line in it I liked, because it starts off with there's three guys robbing a convenience store, and Spike just walks in with like headphones on, pretending like he doesn't realize a robbery's going on, and then like takes down the dudes, and freaking, you know, Jet comes in through a hole in the ceiling and like takes out the other dudes, and they're all like, yeah, hey, we caught these guys. Well, then another guy comes out of the bathroom and immediately grabs, like, a customer and is, like, holding a gun to her head. And Spike's like, Jet, didn't you say there was three robbers? He's like, yeah. And he's like, well, there's a fourth guy here. And the guy's like, hey, aren't you? He's like, hey, you take too long to take a shit. And this kind of goes back to arguing with Jet. It's, like, very bad boys. And then the guy's just like, you know... You better drop your guns or I'll kill this old lady. And, you know, of course, you know, Jet, the old cop, drops his gun, but then Spike just points it right at him. And he's like, sorry, lady, we're not the cops. We're not, you know, heroes. You know, saving you is not my job. And she's like, and he goes like, cowboy scumbag. And he shoots the guy and ends up saving the lady, but taking the dude out. And she's like, what are you? And he just like spins his gun around. He's like, just your friendly neighborhood bounty hunter, ma'am. And like, I just kind of love the thing where he just draws down the guy's like, sorry, man, we're not the police. Saving you is not my job. It's like so freaking hardcore.
I mean, sometimes, you know, I mean, you got to be honest with the situation.
And he's like, sorry, it's just bad luck. All right, so any final thoughts on here, Diablo?
Man, it's phenomenal, but yeah. It is a beast of a cigar. This is not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, it's definitely not a wake and bake, and it's not a multiple... cigar in one session smoke. This one's not for the lighthearted.
But yeah, I mean, you know, as you know, we talk about, you know, looking for the, you know, cigars as, you know, dark as our, you know, souls and whatnot. I mean, this is definitely the darkest that Punch has to offer, and you know, out of a lot of the powerhouse cigars, this one ranks. I mean, as of right now, this is probably my favorite. You know, yeah, if we're talking full strength, powerhouse, I mean, this is it. I mean, you know, I was a big fan of the, you know, LFD.
The DL-700.
DL-700. I mean, that is a beast of a cigar, but I think the Diablo now ranks king.
Yeah. I mean, this is definitely becoming one of my my go-to cigars right now. So with that, we'll be right back. I had a dream that I was chilling on the Bebop, yeah. And I was Spike Spiegel in a suit, no need for Reeboks, nah. Bounty hunter with aspirations of being a rapper, yeah. I'm writing songs whenever these bounty heads get captured, yeah. We working hard for the money. Me and Jet Black on a mission, running and gunning. Edward on the computer, keeping that info coming. And Faye Valentine, that girl's always up to something. Oh yeah, forgot to mention we got a dog too, yeah. A data dog named Dine, he's pretty smart too, uh-huh. He knows how to communicate through his barks too, Sometimes I think he's the canine version of R2. The lifestyle of a bounty hunter's not a joke, nah. We could save the whole planet and yet still be broke, yeah. Space cowboy chasing bounties every day, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Richie, me and my crew, we stay scheming. Me and my crew, we stay scheming.
And now it's time for Blowing Smoke.
We'll talk about their lives and talk about how they're impacted by this work that we've done in a bubble for so many years. And the wonderful thing I found about DragonCon is that despite its massive size, I still have those opportunities to have those kinds of conversations, talk about real world stuff. And the staff here seems to be of that same mindset. It really, you can tell that it's run by people who love this and who are really here for the fans. And I appreciate that. I really enjoy that aspect of it.
When you're coming up with a voice for a character, do you already have a voice in mind, or is it once you see what you're going to look like on the screen, is that when the voice starts to develop?
Yeah, I try never to pre-anticipate something based on knowing that I'm going to be playing a character. I do like to see either a model sheet for the character, or I wait for the actual description of the character, however they end up describing it, whether it's on paper or by the director. That actually helps me to paint a picture in my mind, and quite often that changes when I get into the room to actually record it. So the preconceived stuff sometimes happens automatically, but for me, I'm a much more visual type person, and I kind of go back to the sandbox days where I'd be sitting with a little action figure, giving it a voice and having them talk to each other, and that's kind of the way I run my career. It's a very organic process. Yeah, that's a great question.
With Zeb, there's obviously was a you know, they've done a diversity of accents,
yep,
across the Star Wars world. So when they come along for Zeb, like, how much instruction did you have there as far as what he was going to sound like?
We actually did a lot of it by committee. My first impression, getting the description of the character, and I think my first audition, was more taught Cockney type accent and a little bit less intelligible. Once I made it, I think, to third callbacks, and I went over to the studio and sat in front of Dave Filoni and the whole crew, he started firing things at me. He said, all right, now try Russian, now try German, now try Northern England, now a little bit of Australian. And I think what we ended up with was just a bad UK accent, frankly, that wasn't quite, you can't quite place where it's from, and you might hear a little bit of Australian slipping in sometimes. We just wanted something that sort of sounded familiar, but could potentially be off-world and that would fit nicely in with all the other dialects that were happening. But there was a lot of pressure on Zeb in the beginning because he's new to the Star Wars universe, based on a Ralph McQuarrie design for the original Wookiees. And I tried to push all that out of my head because that freaks me out if I think in those terms. And it didn't really even dawn on me until I started recording Zeb for real once I booked the job. The weight of all of that and how deep it would go. And in fact, I had forgotten that it was a Star Wars thing. Because in the beginning, I didn't even know it was Star Wars. The original auditions, the original first few auditions, he had a completely different name. The show was under a code name. Everything was top secret. And so I kind of pushed that in my mind. And when I went to the third callbacks for it at the studio, it didn't even occur to me that this was going to be a new Star Wars series. They may have even said it at the time. But when it really clicked in, I was in Birmingham, England, doing a Transformers convention when I got the call that I'd booked it, and they needed to record that day, and they found me a studio in somebody's house in some suburb somewhere. They dropped me off with a taxi, and I'm walking around this weird neighborhood, and this lovely English couple comes out of their house, and they look like Ma and Pa Kettle coming out of this house, and lead me inside, and I go upstairs, and they put the script in front of me, and I see stormtroopers on the script, and I went, this is Star Wars. This is really Star Wars. And I might have squeed out loud with everybody on the phone on the other end at Lucasfilm. And that was the moment that it really clicked in for me that this was Star Wars, and this is something that's going to become part of the Star Wars universe permanently. And I'd worked on the games for years, but this was a whole other level. And that was when we really refined the voice and the dialect for the character. And no pressure doing a UK accent in front of native speakers. So, but I think that kind of helped it along, just speaking to this lovely couple who had invited me into their home and hearing their accents kind of helped me dial in, too.
My wife's Australian. The Australian does come through at times.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She picks up on it. She's like, hey.
Yeah. Well, that's one of my favorite accents, and I do it really badly, but I love sprinkling it in wherever I can.
Yeah. Speaking of video games, I mean, you do a lot of animated stuff, but also, like, you know, what is it, Guinness World Record of prolific video games. Yeah. Is there a different skill set to recording, you know, a non-linear video game type audio versus, you know, a linear complete story, you know, an animated series or movie and such?
Well, it's the acting is acting. It's really the same principle. The biggest differentiation is in video games we have to do it a lot faster and a lot more of it. Games like Mass Effect, for example, I walked into the studio and they gave me like a 4-inch stack of paper and said, this is what we need to get through today. And it's, you know, like 1,000 to 2,000 lines done in 10 different ways. So you have to be able to put just as much quality into each one of those lines as you would if you were doing 40 lines on a 4-hour session on an original animated production. That's really the challenge, is just the stamina and being able to stay present for 1,000 lines or more. And in that case, we rely on our director very heavily, and the director will give us all the context we need. There's no time to really go over the context of the grand arc in the video games. And it's much more taxing physically, especially when we're doing a lot of fight scenes or what we call sound sets, the impacts and the reactions, that sort of thing, which can be very grueling. And at the end of one of those sessions, I literally feel like I've been through that battle. I can feel it in every fiber of every muscle of my body.
Yeah, person getting shot 150 different ways.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of ways to die, and I have died most of them repeatedly, and that's just something I happen to be pretty good at. I'm probably better at dying than anything else.
As a player, so am I.
Yeah, yeah, but it's kept me employed for many years, but it's grueling. It's really, really tough on the body. Yeah, do you have a question?
Yeah. So Spike Spiel is where I first became really aware of who you were. Cowboy Bebop's my favorite anime of all time.
Oh, nice.
Do you feel like that's easier or harder because you've already got a source material that you're pulling from and you're doing the American version of it? Mm-hmm. Or do you like doing something original more than an anime?
Ooh, boy. That's a very complicated question.
Sorry.
Anna, no, it's good. I like the complicated ones. I began my career in anime, and so that's actually what I'm most comfortable doing, even though there's the technicality of the juggling act of looking at the script, watching the screen, listening to the director, staying in character, and trying to not only match what's there before, but to try to enhance it and make it palatable for an American audience. It's a very interesting balancing act that not that many people are really good at, who are fine actors. It's a tough skill set to do. But literally, that's where I began, and that is my comfort zone. And I love the people involved in anime. And it's less lucrative than anything else I do. I'm probably making the same thing on Naruto that I made 20 years ago. But I do it because I love to do that. That said, it's kind of a solitary experience. I'm in the room by myself, across the glass from maybe one or two other people, and that's it. I do love being in an environment where it's a full cast, like Transformers or Wolverine or Rebels, where we do get to play off of each other and we become a family. And that's a lasting thing too. So with anime, it took me probably 10 years before I met the entire cast of Cowboy Bebop. We were never in the room at the same time. And so we have to come to conventions or or events that we're doing, premiere type things, before we'll meet each other. And occasionally we'll see each other in the hallway and give each other a high five, and we know of each other. But literally, it took me, I think, 10 years before I met most of the people on that cast. Wow. And on something like Rebels, or there's a show that we're working on now called, or we finished just recently, called Transformers Rescue Bots. Not only is it fun working with these guys, but they become family to the point where we still text each other from wherever we are in the world and check up on each other. There was a fire in my hometown over the weekend, and people who are all over the world at conventions now are checking in with me to make sure that my house is okay. I mean, that's something that you can't really experience when you're working in a solo environment. And the camaraderie of all of that is the most important, most fun factor for me. Not to mention the fact that in a cast-type situation, we get to play off of each other, and they're hilarious people. They're some of the funniest people I've ever met in my life, and many of them are stand-up comics and improv actors, and I learn so much from them, and they improve my performance, and hopefully stuff that I do will give them ideas to play with, too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Last time you and I saw each other was at Celebration.
Yes.
That's when the announcement came down about the final season of Rebels. Now you've had some time to digest. I know
thanks for bringing that up, dude.
Sorry. Now you've had a little time to digest it, so yeah. Like, where's your head at now with it?
Well, it's so many emotions, and it hasn't gotten easier, honestly. I love this franchise so much, and I loved this incarnation of Star Wars so much that it's very bittersweet for me. It almost causes physical pain to know that it's over. And I will stop thinking about it for a while, and then the trailer was just released today for season 4. And it brought up all the emotion all over again, knowing that as soon as this starts airing, that's kind of the beginning of the end for Star Wars Rebels. So yeah, I'm a sad puppy today. I'm having a hard time with it. That said, Dave Filoni and everybody at Lucasfilm put so much love into this stuff, and being a fan of Star Wars since 1977, knowing that they get to do it the way they want to do it, they get to finish this the way they want to finish it, unlike with Clone Wars, where they really couldn't bring it to its natural conclusion. That gives me solace, and I want this to have the ending that it deserves, and I'm not going to tell you what that is. But
imagine it wouldn't be a good idea.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't be a good idea at all. I can feel the chip already starting to blink.
I have lots of, Zeb appearing in a live-action possibility, and you could still voice him, but I realize that you probably can't answer any of that yet anyway, considering there's still a season to go.
Yeah, from your mouth to their ears, please hire me. Please hire me. Please hire me. cartoon, live-action, I don't care what it is. Just let me do the voice. I hope that it continues on. I certainly see a setup for it now that Zeb and Kallus are a thing.
Romance.
Yeah, right? You know, I just want to go off to Lyrisan and start a family. That's all. there's so many things that we can do from this point forward, and I just hope they include me in it. I hope I haven't upset anybody enough to the point where they won't hire me again. But I hope it continues for a long, long time to come. They tend to do that in the Star Wars universe. They tend to bring people back. In different forms, one form or another. And they know that I can die really well as a stormtrooper, so even if Zeb doesn't work out, I'm still willing to give him a live Wilhelm scream. So, yeah.
All right, I believe we have time for, like, one more question.
Okay.
I have one.
Okay.
So I've heard you do so many voices for so very many things. Has there ever been a part that has stumped you where you get a script and you're just like, I don't know how to play a 12-headed dwarf from outer space who wants to kill the world with kittens? I don't know what this part is.
That sounds easy. The one that I think was so odd, and at first I thought I wasn't going to be able to do anything with it, but it was an entire landscape made out of human feces for a thing called Kashmir the Flying Camel. It was an audiobook narrated by Bryan Cranston, and it was just myself and Colleen O'Shaughnessy, a great voice actor. And we did all of the parts. Colleen and I did. She did all the. I think actually we cross-gendered too on some of them. But one of the characters in this was literally an entire landscape made out of all the ills of humankind, all of the fear and the doubt and the detritus waste from from humankind. And it was this, it was a very friendly creature, but he would just sort of, his mouth would just sort of bubble up out of the ground at one point and then come up from another place, and he smelled really bad and it was really disgusting. So I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with that. But once I got out of the room, something clicked. It always does. It's again, that 8-year-old in the sandbox. And it ended up just being a kind of thing. It started there, and then a voice sort of emerged from that. And it just pops. It just, that's my disease. It sort of happens. So the stump, fortunately, doesn't last for too long. The only time that it's really difficult for me, if it's a dialect that I'm not familiar with, and then I'll just have to be honest about it and say, I know somebody who can do this better than I can. Or just, if they want the crappy dialect, I'll give it to them. So that's happened before, too. The funny thing about that is that I actually took a dialect class recently to try to get better at the authentic dialects. And I came in for a session, and they wanted me to do some Irish character. And I started doing an authentic dialect, and they said, no, we want something that's more stereotypical. And it ended up being a Lucky Charms dude again. So you know, no matter how much you prepare, you don't know what you're in for. And so the stump thing isn't really too much of a problem, because generally they'll know what they're getting when they hire me.
I guess you wouldn't be working as much as you are if you could be stumped that easily.
I guess. I'm kind of fearless that way, too. Even if I'm uncomfortable with something, I'm going to try it out. And that's what I recommend to all the voice actors coming into the business, is that do the thing that scares you the most, and do that as much as you possibly can. And that's the joy of this, is the discovery of that and getting through that fear and to the other side of it. And when you do, you come up with something unique. And that served me really well throughout my career.
Hey, gang, are you looking for another podcast to listen to? Well, you're in luck. The Nerdy Laser is a podcast, and we specialize in 90s nerd culture. But we don't leave anything out. If something is cool and nerdy, we will talk about it. So join myself, Richard Yule, and a variety of guests on the Nerdy Laser podcast, available on iTunes, Podbean, and the ESO Network.
Yes, science!
And welcome to science! It's time to get edumacational, y'all.
So you're going to make like Ayn.
Yes, bring out my data dog and learn y'all some shit. So, you know, been waiting for NASA to probe Uranus, but that's not happened yet. So, first they're probing the sun.
I hear it smells very gaseous there.
Oh, it's a gas giant?
Yeah.
So, this Sunday, NASA launched the Parker Solar Probe. Launch Sunday, and its mission is to fly through the corona of the sun. It's going to be the closest we've ever gotten to the sun by any kind of, you know, man-made craft. The thing is, it's kind of cool. It's kind of doing some new shit, is because it's going to not only pass through the corona of the sun, it's going to slingshot around. I use Venus's gravity to kind of slingshot around, and supposed to make 7 flybys over 7 years, with its closest pass coming in 2024. And it said by that time it's made so many slingshots that it will be traveling at 430,000 miles per hour, which will set a new record for fastest man-made flight.
That's just crazy that, you know, we can actually have something that, I mean, not just self-destruct going that fast.
Yeah. Like, and getting that close to the sun, like previously, I forgot, it was like something like 70 million miles away from the sun, and this is going to go as close as 3.8 million miles from the sun. And it's going to have to survive temperatures of 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit. That's hot as fuck. But they say, yeah, the internal temperatures of the spacecraft will be like, you know, room temperature. It's got a 4.5-inch carbon composite safe pretty much holding the working parts of this this spacecraft. And they're wanting to kind of, you know, test, you know, magnetic fields, plasma, excited particles, solar winds, you know, because, you know, really we don't know a whole lot about, you know, the close up to the sun. Because actually
it's big and it's hot.
Yeah. Because, I mean, as hot as it is and as far as we're like 93 million miles away and we still feel its heat. So that close to it, that's some hot shit. And they said it's actually like hotter in the atmosphere than it is like on the surface. Like the for some reason, like the closer you get to the sun, it's not as hot as it is in that kind of chronosphere that we're going to be experimenting on. And it's kind of cool because this is the first time a, you know, another first for NASA. This is the first time a spacecraft has been named after a living scientist. Dr. Eugene Parker was the first one to kind of theorize and wrote like the first paper in like the late 50s about, you know, solar wind, something that we know that actually exists now. But he was kind of the first one to come up with this concept of a solar wind. So they, you know, of course, named this spacecraft after him, you know, in its first trip to the sun.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, I don't know. I'm really anxious to see, you know, what the data shows for that.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's kind of, you know, cool, you know, new sciencey stuff, which was launched 3 a.m. Sunday on the United Launch Alliance Delta 2 Heavy Rocket. Or no, the Delta 4 Heavy Rocket. Big as shit, bro.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for them to probe Uranus, though.
I hear if you join the ranks, you might get that probing you so desire.
Hey, let's join the Space Force. I heard they're going to Uranus.
Yeah, that's why we can't be scientists.
Yeah, we would definitely not be able to say Uranus with a straight face.
But you know all the scientists are making the same jokes.
Yes.
They're just doing it more science-y-like.
Yes.
So is that how you perceive a scientist?
Got to stroke your goatee and, yes, I'm American, but for some reason I talk with a snooty English accent because I'm a scientist.
I feel like from now on, that's how, all right, for the rest of the podcast, that's, you know, or for the science segment, that's now you're...
I need to make it like a character and start doing all these science articles as my snooty scientist character. I might work on that for the next episode.
No, you're working on it right now. Improv, bitch, go.
All right. No, can't do it. I crack myself up. But...
You're not making your anus jokes.
The U.S. Army is now, you know, recently we had what's being called the possible first attempt of assassination by drone. Drones carrying explosives try to attack the Venezuelan president. Luckily, they exploded prematurely. They had a premature detonation, if you will. But so the Army is now requesting what they're calling counter-unmanned aircraft systems from Lockheed Martin. And basically, these things are going to be drone hunting drones. They want to be able to shoot down incoming drones with their own drones using some kind of microwave beam technology.
So it's like a mini EMP.
Yeah, pretty much.
Interesting.
I mean, now that they already have kind
of... You know what sucks, though? Like, how long before, you know, this shit goes rogue and, you know, little mini EMPs, you know, start going off, you know, fucking disabling cars and, you know.
Well, in this article, they apparently already have some kind of, like, anti-drone, like, man-based weapons. It looks like a freaking AR-15 with a satellite dish on the front of it that can, you know, use electromagnetic pulse.
It's like, envision the future weapon. All right, let's use the satellite dish. Like, let's...
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it looks like it's based on
like
an AR platform.
Anytime, like, you you know, have like some kind of like science fiction style gun, you know. I mean, I think back to Marvin the Martian. You know, the little ray gun that he had almost looks like that on an AR platform instead of the pistol.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's called the Drone Defender and uses an electromagnetic pulse to disable targets at a range of 600 meters. This is going to be the first kind of aerial-mounted anti-drone technology. So, you know, when the machines rise up, we're working on our anti-machine weaponry. Unfortunately, we've attached that to a machine that may also go Skynet on us, and then we're just fucked.
What if it goes full ghost gun and becomes invisible?
Oh, shit. It's going to disable our podcast at 600 meters. But as long as we're...
The world is not fortunate enough.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of cool though that, you know, warfare is going into the future here, and now we're having to worry about, you know, Lockheed Martin already makes laser weapons and all this kind of other futuristic shit.
So why can't we, like, you know, use the microwave waves and, like, you know, cook some food? Like, I could just, you know, aim my rifle and be like, yep, that's nice and toasty now.
I can cook a hot pocket at 600 meters.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. I don't have to go to the kitchen. I could just, like, aim it and, like, cook it on the table while I'm still sitting at my Lazy Boy. And then get my drone to fly me my...
Crap, I was within 100 meters. It's charred.
Shit. Friggin' light my cigar with a microwave blast. Try not to burn my mustache off. Here, let me light that for you.
Dude, why is half your face missing? You could do a great Two-Face cosplay.
Oh, but speaking of artificial intelligence, apparently we now have an AI that can predict human behavior based on eye movements. The University of South Australia, University of Stettingrad, and Finder University released papers that they've developed a AI that can kind of determine personality traits, you know, based on eye movement. You know, it said, you know, it may not accurately, you know, fully, but it definitely, like, can detect certain things, like, you know, they say they found multiple correlation between eye movement and certain personality types. For example, neurotic subjects are said to blink faster, while curious people move their eyes around more than the norm. Conscientious individuals experience greater pupil size changes than average, while open-minded people have a tendency to stare at abstract images longer. You know, and they said basically they could tell if someone was agreeable, conscientious, extroverted, or neurotic based solely on their, you know, eye movements. They said this kind of technology can kind of help AI interact better with people. It can kind of tell what personality they're dealing with and kind of tailor their responses to get the best reaction.
Great. Robot overlords are just going to scan our eyes and be like, okay, this is how I adapt my personality to make this person trust and like me. Yeah.
Oh, this person's an asshole. This is how I'm going to deal with him. Yeah, so... I mean, but, you know, we already know, like, you know, there's elements of eye movement and lie detection. So now, like, you know, when our robot overlords are questioning us, they're gonna be able to pick up who's the resistance based on their eye movement. So, yay, Skynet!
Brought to you by Skynet.
Oh,
for all your satellite needs.
Yeah, you want killer robots? This is how we get killer robots. But in some lighter science news, especially with Dragon Con coming up, and definitely plan off going off my diet for that weekend because there's plenty of alcohol and crappy food involved. But recently in the California...
Lots and lots of cardio!
Yeah. Recently, the California Journal of Health promotion released a study. The lead scientist, Jessica Kruger, basically determined that, you know, we've kind of all talked about having the drunk munchies. It's not just for stoners, but drunk munchies is a thing, according to this study. And it explains why at Dragon Con I buy the $5 a slice of freaking Papa John's pizza, because I'm drunk and I'm hungry, and that's the only thing you can find at that hour if you don't want to walk all the way to the 24-hour diner. But yeah, this study of 300 students... because, of course, you want to talk about drunks, you talk to college students. And they basically found that, you know, asked them kind of average questions about their eating habits, and then also asked them, like, you know, how likely are they to eat before bed, after drinking, and what? And also asked about their, basically, the next day post-binge drinking eating habits. And they found out that people, not only pretty much 100% of the responders, that said, yeah, we eat shit, like, you know, after we're we're drunk, and they tend to go with salty, fatty, or other unhealthy foods, specifically pizza probably being the number one response. And I don't know if that's just a general we want pizza, or if it's the fact that pizza places are open late, and that's, like, the most thing you can usually find after the bars close in, like, big cities is pizza places.
I mean, think about your average bar fare, right? I mean... What are your options, really? I mean, like you said, a pizza joint that's catering to the drinking crowd, a, you know, fried anything, you know, yeah. catering to the drunk crowd. Like,
I mean,
there isn't this... like a 24-hour, oh, we're gluten-free and vegan-friendly, like raw, you know, like just about every, you know, place you could go to get a decent meal is going to be closed after about 11 p.m.
Yeah.
Not leaving a whole lot of options.
That too.
Outside and, of Waffle House.
Yeah, that's what I was fixing to say. Here in the South, that's the exact reason why there's a Waffle House at every exit on the 400 is because drunks want greasy food at 2 in the morning when the bar's closed.
For some reason, want to drive. Why?
And they also said, you know, the next day people are less likely to skip breakfast but tend to go toward more junk food over healthy breakfast options, which usually it's the leftover pizza from the night before or something super greasy. And they kind of attributed this to possibly, like, misconceptions about hangover cures. Because I think I've always heard someone say, oh, you want to cure a hangover, you need to eat a big greasy breakfast the next day to... And, you know, hell, I remember getting drunk in Helen one time and walking a mile to a Waffle House because I thought it was closer the night before when I was drunk. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's like just down the street. And the next morning I'd walk like a mile and a half to get my greasy waffle and then puked it halfway back to the hotel. But, yeah, it's like, you know, now there's science to back up drunken munchies are a thing. And it's exactly, like I said, it's exactly why
Is
I pay
really
so much
science,
for a freaking pizza.
Though? I mean, you know, once again, I still kind of argue for the sake of convenience more so than, I mean.
Well, that's one of the things kind of as a, to fight like obesity and stuff, they're kind of recommending colleges have healthier food options open later to, you know, maybe if we won't go straight to the junk food in the middle of the night. Because, yeah, at that hour, your Waffle House, if you're in a big city, late night pizza joints or the 24 hour McDonald's, like fucking walking out of McDonald's with like 10 cheeseburgers because you're drunk and it seems like a good idea. Yeah, there's not a whole lot of healthy options at that hour. So they're like, kind of, that's one thing to kind of recommending to help fight obesity is.
So that's our health food, $1 million idea. We're gonna start a chain called the Healthy Drunk. Yes. You know. Hey, that's fine if you want to destroy your liver with alcohol and stuff like that, but we got healthy food options available.
Wow, that could be a thing. Totally going to do that. That wraps me up for this week. We'll be right back.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
All right, so
breaking news sound effect.
There you go. One day we're gonna get that soundboard I keep talking about. I'm just gonna program one, but until then, soundboard Joe. So this one here, I guess it's a little bit nerdy. But you know, we've been on an Africa kick, and started with, you know, Leo Marcelli, you know, I guess it's been a couple of months ago doing a metal version of Toto's Africa. And I guess Google, Spynet, and everything has come together because since then I keep seeing more and more of this cover keep popping up. And
I went into like a random cigar shop the other day and Africa happened to be playing on the sound system there. And I'm just like, Brad should be here.
Wakanda forever.
Yes.
But anyway, so a little known band, Weezer, been around for, golly, what, 20, 30 years now, probably?
Probably.
I mean, some reason the dudes still look like they're 12. I'm not sure what kind of anti-aging meds they're on. But, you know, somebody, you know, near and dear to kind of the nerd geek pop culture, just... quirky musician in general, Weird Al Yankovic, decided to join them on stage as they were performing Toto's Africa. And the reason I bring it up is because the accordion just does something. And it just adds a little bit, you know, this isn't the metal version. This is a, you know, definitely a rockier version, but, you know, it's also got its quirkiness with Weezer and Weird Al. So yeah, if you haven't seen it...
I missed that last tour he went. I need to see Weird Al when he comes to town next. It's like he's getting up there. He's got to be I don't know how old he is, but I've never been to a Weird Al concert. I've got to see him next time he comes to Atlanta. That has to be a thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we interviewed MC Lars a couple of years ago at Vans Warped Tour, and I know MC Lars has done some, you know, stuff with Weird Al, you know,
true
playing
for
accordion,
real,
you know, on a couple of tracks and such. And, you know, it's cool. Check it out. So we're going to link to a video when we post this episode.
Check the show notes.
Yeah. All right. Moving right along. Summer. It's still here. It's sort of winding down. We're in Atlanta, Georgia. It's still hot. So
yeah, summer goes to November in Atlanta.
So, you know, Shark Week wrapped up on Discovery Channel not too long ago. It seems, you know, then History Channel does, you know, their version of Shark Week. And, you know, then Food Network does its, you know.
Shark Week.
Yeah. I mean, sharks. The ocean's, you know, predator. Well, the world can't get enough of them. So, here we go. We got a new Jaws movie. No, nope, just kidding.
Well, we got the Meg. That's pretty
well,
much
the Meg,
Jaws.
You know, and, you know, it's...
biggest fuck Jaws.
It's making its debut. I think it opened, what, was it this weekend or last weekend? I don't know.
I don't know if it's out yet or not. I haven't paid any attention to it other than seeing the trailer.
Well, there was a movie last year called 47 Meters Down. The film was produced on a $6 million budget and, you know, made about $44 million at the box office. So, you know, I would say that's a success.
Yeah, everybody loves a shark movie.
And then usually with success, it's like, hey, we should do that again. Well, folks, they're doing it again. So we're getting 47 Meters Down, the next chapter. I guess, you know, it's a sequel to Mandy Moore and Claire Holt film, you know, and this is set to release in the summer of 2019. This is going to be set off the coast of Brazil and, the story of a group of girls looking for adventure. So we know what that entails.
Shenanigans.
Yep. People's going to get eaten by sharks. So, we'll link a, link to the trailer here, and this is going to be directed by Jonas Robert and co-written by Ernest Rera, and they both worked together on the original movie, so if you were a fan, you'll probably like the sequel. Speaking of sequels, probably one of the most anticipated games for me. We got our actual first gameplay trailer, and this is going to be for Red Dead Redemption 2.
It looks freaking amazing.
Yes, going to be releasing on PS4 and Xbox One.
Yeah, I've kind of slacked with my my gaming lately. I haven't broke out my PlayStation in a while, but yeah, this one's going to... Yeah, I'm buying this one. I mean, just the graphics on it look almost realistic at certain points. It's just insane. Even though it doesn't look like we're going to get to... A return of Marston from the original, but so we got a whole new protagonist this go around. But yeah, it just looks like they've taken everything from the original and just upped it.
Yeah, see, now here's my issue.
Grand Theft Auto on a horse is pretty much.
This is, you know, going to release October 26th. That's in prime hunt season for me. So am I going to be able to put away my spooky shenanigans to pick up my PlayStation controller and play Red Dead? Yes.
I mean, since I've retired from haunt acting, this year I'm definitely going to hit more haunt. So we may have to do another haunted house review episode and see how many places we can visit this year. Hey, maybe they'll release a like they did with the first Red Dead, the zombie expansion for it, so it'll fit into the spookiness.
Yeah, I don't know that we'll get an expansion that quickly, but I mean, that's to be, you know, yet to be seen. But, you know, this film is introducing, you know, as I'm watching the gameplay trailer, I'm, you know, thinking, all right, they've introduced fishing, they've introduced, you know, much more interaction. So I'm thinking, you know, with RPGs, you know, what can we do to make them that much more immersive? So they're reworking the... You know, combat systems, you know, adding, you know, the ability to interact with the world. NPCs.
Yeah, it looks like this time you're not just a lone gunman, you're part of a gang too. So you're going to have people you have to befriend or whatnot. And also, like, it's, even the interactions with your horse, you have to, like, take care of your horse and stuff, or it'll, like, you know, not want to cooperate.
Yeah, see, I was thinking, you know, I've been on a Breath of the Wild kick for quite a while. Great game, absolutely. I mean, I've been a fan of Zelda since my childhood, but, you know, that's one of the mechanics there is, you know, you've got to actually, like, if you capture a wild horse, you've got to break it and then, you know, feed it apples and, you know, if it gets spooked, calm it and stuff in order to, you know, build up your horse's like meter. Otherwise, you know, that bastard just gonna run off of a cliff or, you know, not listening to any of your commands. So, you know, it just makes games that much more immersive. There is, you know, it looks like the ability now where you're going to have, you know, central camps and you're going to be required to, you know, keep folks happy and, you know, provide them with food and everything of that nature. So, you know, more traditional RPG elements there. So, you know, it's going to be a great game and a time suck.
Yeah.
And amazing.
It looks like it has the ability, like the first one did, that you can either be, make good choices or fully embrace the outlaw and be like just an evil mofo. So, I mean, if it's like the first, you know, I have to play it through as the good guy once, then I have to go back through and play it as like the freaking scourge of the West. So it's like one of those that, like, pretty much forces you to play in multiple times.
Yeah, I mean, you know, taking notes from, you know, such franchises as Skyrim or, you know, Knights of the Old Republic, you know, thinking, and like, stuff like that, you know, where, you know, depending on your evil meter, you know, how do folks perceive you and that type of thing. So, you know, extremely excited.
And also apparently hookers. I mean, in that trailer, they showed a lot of, like, you know, Old West whorehouses. I don't know if there's a, God of War type minigame where you get to visit the whorehouse, but from that trailer, I think it's a possibility that that exists.
You must achieve one orgasm.
Up, up, down, down, left, right, left, right.
That was probably one of the most epic moments in God of War, though, where it's like, oh, crap, it's a quick time event. I must perform to maximum. So, up next is...
The same thing we learned. We don't want that to be a quick time event.
No, not at all. Disney has come out and said they intend to release all completed Fox films after the purchase successfully goes through. You know, God, $71.3 billion merger. That's just insane.
Have you also heard that they're going to...
Yeah.
Because we've talked about them starting their own streaming service, but they said Ant-Man and the Wasp is going to be the last Disney movie on Netflix. Everything going forward will be on their app. And the plan in, like, I think it was either 2019 or 2020, pulling all Disney Marvel content from Netflix to their own series. So, yet to see how that's going to affect, you know, the Defenders and the Netflix Marvel series. But movie-wise, it's all going to the Disney app.
Yep, anything to get some extra dollars. So, yeah, I mean...
Speaking of which, I just finished Luke Cage, and season two of Luke Cage is pretty badass.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious, you know, because, you know, there's several films that, you know, Fox was working on, you know, specifically, you know, Dark Phoenix and the New Mutants that were undergoing reshoots. I wonder what that has in store.
I mean, we still got at least a few years of planned Marvel releases. So, I mean, we've got the Infinity War Part 2, we've got Captain Marvel and stuff like that. You know, probably after the ones that are already in production as far as X-Men goes, I see them doing like some kind of reboot of the and bringing all those characters into the proper MCU now. But I'm probably going to finish out the storylines that have been started already and then try to do some kind of combining going forward from there.
So, speaking of storylines, we're not going to get into all of the, you know, nitty-gritty details or, you know, start any debates or anything. But, you know, have seen rumors that Disney is, you know, potentially going to scrap the script for Guardians of the Galaxy 3. And regardless of your stance, you know, a lot of folks have come out in support. And, you know, in Guardians news, Dave Bautista says, you know, if Disney doesn't use James Gunn's script, then he's out.
Yeah, and I've even seen recent stories that Disney may be considering rethinking their stance and bringing him back. Because, I mean, all right, the stuff he said was bad. You can't defend that stuff in any way. But it was a joke that happened 10 years ago. It's not like he's doing bad things now or saying bad things now. Get over it. Shit, did all of us said dumb shit 10 years ago. You know, there's no reason to, like, scrap a whole franchise over, like, ancient news. It's one thing if he released something that they found offensive today. And, like, yeah, sure. Or if he, you know, they caught him doing some Harvey Weinstein shit, like, sure, burn him to the ground. But fucking saying dumb shit on the internet, like, 10 years ago is shouldn't be something. I mean, it's not like you didn't know that shit when you hired him to begin with. You're just now, like, firing him because it, like, you know, somebody made a stink about
but
it.
But then again, you know, I have seen reports that, you know, there's potentially, you know, some discussion on getting James Gunn back into the fray. So, I mean, you know, in a world where, unfortunately, money speaks, money most of the time is going to win. So,
and he's made Disney a lot of money.
I mean, and I hate to say it, but Disney doesn't exactly have the greatest track record of, you know, having the most
PC of
yeah, really. I mean,
you go back into Disney's past. Disney's done some fucked up shit, you know, in the prior to this. So
yeah,
it's definitely the pot calling the kettle black. Yes, yeah.
You know, absolutely. So, speaking of black, we'll just move right along. The Batman is to set to begin filming spring of 2019 with, you guessed it, Ben Affleck producing.
Yeah, because there's been some, like, you know, because I knew he was going to direct and he backed out of directing.
Batfleck.
And, you know, there's been, like, rumors that he may not even be acting in it anymore, but apparently they probably backed up a truckload of money and, like, because you said money talks, and, you know, he's definitely staying the Batman, at least for now.
Yeah, I mean, as of right now, he is on board to, you know, produce. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, who knows? We may not necessarily see him in the, you know, the cape and cowl, but who knows?
Yeah, if he's still producing, he's probably still going to be acting. Hell, I'd like to see him do, he could play Old Man Batman and do, do Batman Beyond if he wants to get out of the suit.
And while we're on a little bit of a Batman kick, Zazie Beetz, you know, is joining Jacqueline Phoenix, Joker film.
Yeah, like, I've never heard of her prior to Deadpool. I was not familiar with her before then, but I thought her as Domino was excellent in Deadpool 2, so, yeah. We've had, like, love or hate relationships with all the DC Universe movies, but, I mean, she did a pretty good job with the Deadpool. Let's see if they give her a good movie to be in.
Hopefully, she's got a good script and everything to work with. Because, you know, I mean, like you said, a damn great Domino.
Yeah, and like I said, I was not a fan of Juggalo Joker. But, yeah, Jacqueline Phoenix is a weird bastard. I mean, he could probably pull off a good Joker if they give him a good script.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, man, is, you know, you know, he really, you know, shined for me.
That freaking Johnny Cash movie,
you know,
was
when
badass.
He did Walk the Line, yeah. And, you know, that I was like, holy shit, you know. And then since then, you know, I mean, I think, like you said, given the script and everything else, it could be really.
Yeah, if he has something good to work with, he's definitely got the acting
and even
skill to pull it off.
And even subpar. I mean, sometimes you can have a not so great script, but a really great actor be able to adapt and, you know, sell it. So, you know, who knows? And as we wrap up here, Incredibles 2 grosses $1 billion at the global box office. We like the bees. So, Any other news, tidbits, information you got for us, Joe?
Well, as we are coming up, we have one more episode before Dragon Con. So places that you can see us and the rest of the ESO network. We are definitely, there's going to be an ESO meet and greet Thursday night of Con starting at 10 o'clock at the 21 Stories Hyatt Bar. So we will be there eventually. We have our own event to go into. If you want to come see us, we'll be at the Dragon Con Cigar Group meetup starting at 7 o'clock at the Red Phone booth. But eventually we will make our way over to the ESO party as we always do. So, you know, if you're not a smoker, go check out the ESO party. And if you want to come smoke with us, we'll be over at the Red Phone booth Thursday night. And then the rest of the weekend, we'll probably be hanging out at the Hyatt pool smoking.
And
or out back at the Hilton.
Unofficially, there will be some additional shenanigans occurring for some upcoming things.
And also, did you see that there's going to be night fighting this year?
I did not.
Yes, I forgot what night it is. I'll have to look it up. And we, like I said, we'll probably do our traditional Dragon Con survival stuff next episode. But I saw one of the events this year. They're actually having the full-on armored night fighting in the Sheridan.
I'll be sure to bring a Khaleesi and a few dragons.
All right. So with that, check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also on the ESO network at ESOPodcast.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at CigarNerdPod. If you need some cool smoking shirts, go to RealMenSmokeCigars.com. They have the Cigar Nerd shirts, or there's a link on our Facebook and website to our Zazzle store where you can get Cigar Nerds t-shirts, coffee mugs, whatever. And something else that I totally forgot, and I'll probably remember it later to tell you. Oh, yes, we're out available on Stitcher and iTunes, but now we're also on Google Music Play. So, you know, if you're not a iTunes user, you can now find us on there. And with that, also get your energy drinks at StrikeForceEnergy.com, promo code CigarNerds, and see you, Space Cowboy. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.